6, 1982, and we're talking to Goodwin Semekin and Caltag. This is the second tape for today.
I was wondering another thing. I know in a lot of villages, the old days, they used to arrange marriages. The parents would do that.
The what?
They would arrange marriages. Like the parents would pick who your husband and mm-hmm. wife would be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they'd work that
out. I heard a lot of a story about that, too. Yeah. I mean, like if a guy is a good worker and a good nature, and then there's a girl in love with you, with this guy, I mean, he's not in love with him, never met him before, but the parents have picked out this guy to be their son-in-law or daughter-in-law. Because they heard lots about him, he was a good worker. But they call that a forced marriage, you know. But they found out that it wasn't very good. The way I see it right now, I see the
arranged marriage or forced marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And you said that you found out that wasn't very good.
Yeah.
In what ways?
Well, if you make a forced marriage with somebody, you know, that doesn't love you, I found that out. I mean, that's from my experience. I used to go around with my wife ever since we were in school together. And we got used to each other pretty much, you know. But the one thing, our parents didn't like each other. But they couldn't break our love, you know, between me and my wife. They couldn't break that love. I know they couldn't break that love from me, from Florence. And my wife was the same way. My parents couldn't break that love from him. Well, you know, that other friends, like girlfriends, you know, in every village, but seems like I wasn't going too much for them besides Florence, you know. So in 1946, my parents was in Galena, and then I was down here, you know, because my wife was down here, you know. She was my girlfriend. She was down here. When I went up to Glen, and then I told my mother, I'm going to get married. Well, I said, how are you going to feed your family? I make out some way. And she knew that I was going around with Florence, you know, my wife. And he said, my son, he said, if you're going to get married with somebody that don't drink like you. He said, you know. That's all she said to me. And then I came down, and then I told my brother, I sent Florence up to Nolad. There was no, you couldn't get no marriage license, or there was no priest there. I sent Florence up to Nolad. I said, we're going to go see the priest up there and get marriage license up there from the magistrate in Nolado. And he said, okay. So she went up, and then I went up with dog team. I bought my brother's dogs, my brother Otis' dogs. I bought his dogs, and then I went up. I told my brother, I won't get married. So we went up, and we got married on 3rd of March, you know, in Nolado. And then at that time, her sister's husband was living. He was a nice man. Daniel Cipri was his name. You know, he was really a nice man. I don't think there was any other better man than him. I stopped in jail with him, and then pretty soon he told me, after I got married, to that little party that night, and then he said, I want to get somebody to talk to you. A guy that was never never licked his wife, even though he was drunk, even though he was drinking, and his wife was drinking on him. I never heard that guy ever cuss at his wife at no time. I'm going to bring him tonight, and after while we eat, he's going to talk to you. I said, okay. So we sat down, and then this guy was talking to me. He said, he told me, I was married twice, he said. You know, my first wife, I really loved her, and then she died. Now I got a younger girl I'm married to, and she drinks quite a bit. She runs around quite a bit. She likes all the good times she can get. I never cussed at that woman or never laid my hands on her yet in all up to now, he said, you know. And I hope you understand it well, that you're getting married with the girl you love. You pick out the girl that you love. Just the way I was thinking, he was explaining it to me, you know. And then he said, I hope you have a good living. And that's what he told me. And then my grandma told me the same thing too. In his own language, she talked to me. Well, my wife was related to her. So he said, this girl is just like my daughter. And she's the last youngest one in this family. And I think if you treat her good, she'll treat you good. You treat both each other good, and you'll make a good living. You'll have a good home. She said, you know. Well, I listened to them and talked to them, and I realized what they're talking about, you know. Well, and later on, I started to realize it a little bit more and more. And pretty soon, this old lady, before she died, you know, she come and asked me again. He said, Koi, you know, he said, my grandchild. He said, just like the way I told you, it was several years after I got married. Just like the way I told you when you was getting married. Just like you had a handful of what I told you and put it in your gloves. You're just doing it now, she said, you know. Then it started to give me a little bit more thinking about it, you know. Anyway, before I got married, I always thought that if I'm not going to love a girl, if I'm not going to love a woman, if I'm not going to love my children or my family, and if I start in drinking, I always think that I'd never get married. You know? That's the way I figured. You know? Even right now, if I see a little kid, it's just, you know, like my grandchildren over here, my boys, Goodwin Jr. Every time I see them, it seems like my heart is always moving with love for them, you know. That's just the way I feel about them. And not only this one here, I got four other grandchildren, you know, like two in Fairbanks, one in Anchorage, one down at Nikolsky. You know, they all the same to me. They all just like one to me. You know, if they bother me, that's fine. I love it. You know, because I love those, my grandchildren. Like for instance, one summer I was going up to Galena and I had my big boat with me, you know, and then I was going up to get meet my daughters up there. They were going to come down to Galena, and then from there I was going to take them down in boat. And it was nice and quiet for a while coming down, and they were small. All four of them, they were small. You know, then they slipped part of the way down, and from about 40 miles up here, they all woke up, you know. And he started to be, well, you know how kids are. You kind of keep them in one place. Started running around in the boat. But I had a houseboat. So I wasn't scared. You know, I wasn't watching them all the time. Pretty soon he started crawling all over me while I was driving the boat, you know, while I was steering the boat. All over my back and hang on my head. And, you know, I never shout at them or anything, you know. I just think that they just love me like I love them, you know. Mm-hmm. But the most thing I enjoy is I go in there and then I start to tease him. And then he'd sit there and laugh and laugh and laugh, you know, when I tease him. And then sometimes I go beyond the point where he can't take it no more, you know. And especially if Clasper or Henry come down. Henry Akata from Malad, you know, his maintenance man up there. Come down, and then I go in there. I'm going to leave now. He know what's coming up. You know, we won't tease him. But there's some people like that too. There's some people like that could stand a lot of teasing. You know, like for me, sometimes I could take teasing, and I could come right back and tease them too. You know, I know my nephew was telling me, gee, if I'm out for a week. Then they said, we miss you, uncle. You've been out too long. We especially miss you when you meet us someplace on the street and then we say something, then you answer back and some kind of funny answer you give us back. Said, that's what we really miss, they said, you know. So, and I know when they say that, then they respect me, you know, when they say that to me. Mm-hmm.
Sounds like they keep their spirits up, huh?
Yeah, that's just about what it means.
Well, maybe we can talk a little bit more about Old Station. You said that's where your mother was from?
Out here at, way out of Unicate, towards Unicate. Used to call it Ranger Station.
Ranger Station.
Yeah, it used to call it Ranger Station. It had a native name though. It had a native name. It used to call it Kanakai Nokot.
And where is that place at? What would young people call that place now if you wanted to tell them? Ranger Station, do they know that name?
Do you know that name as Ranger Station? Because they used to have a herd of reindeer out there. You know, and then you just name it after that, I guess, Ranger Station. You know, a lot of guys would name some places like a lake up here where guys used to kill some moose before Johnny Summers. We call it Johnny's Lake now. We call it name after him. We call it a Johnny's Lake. There's one lake up here. One old man used to have a bear trap. He used to set bear trap up here. Peter, his last name was Peter. So we call it Peter's Lake. You know, it's the same way that they call that's a station out there, Ranger Station, you call it, you know.
So there used to be reindeer there. Was that when your mother lived there?
Yeah. But it was a place where you used to get a lot of fish. I mean, trout. But they're still doing it now. You're still getting a lot of trout in there.
Who goes out there for trout? People from here or from
Unalakleet? Well, people from Unalakleet go there and put in some fish trap. But last time, about a year ago, I was down Unalakleet. And I always stop with this one family, you know. I mean, I always stop by their place because I know them really well. And every time I go there, she's always cooking trout. And I like fish, you know. If I don't eat fish, I'm hungry right along. Now, that's all I had for dinner was just dry fish, dry strips over there at Merlin, my nephew's place. I always go there every Thursday and Wednesday and Thursday. I always go there and eat dinner with them at lunch hour. And they know it. You know, they bring in fish for me. Now they're having a ham sandwich, them. But my nephew went out there and got some fish and brought some in because I know that's all I'm going to eat. Well, I drink tea with that, and that's enough for me, you know. And that'll stay with me for a long time, that eating fish.
So that family is in the university, what's their name?
His name is Fritz Panekchuk. I used to stay with his dad in 1942 while he was in the army, you know. And I stayed with his dad out there at Unicliff for 21 days. I stayed out there. We were stuck. Me and my brother, we were stuck there, you know, according to the weather. There was no trail, and only Alaska Airlines used to carry mail then at that time.
You were up there because of the mail? Or
because of the weather we were there. We were coming back from Nome, and we got stuck there.
What did you go to Nome for?
I was drafted for the Army.
That's
in 42. That's the time I told you, you know, when my wife was in Nevada and then she was sick. And I told you about that already.
Yeah, so do you visit Unicliff very often now?
Every year I go to Unicliff. Ever since I was a kid, my parents had some relatives down there, so we used to go down there with Doc Tim, and then I used to go with them.
Yeah. What relatives are those?
Well, they're all gone now. Yeah. There's only one that I know, but they have moved to Anchorage. Yeah. But there's one lady out there. Her name is Frida Riley. Her last name is Riley. And every time I go to Unicliff, she's always happy to see me. Because we used to, when we used to go down Unicliff with my parents, we used to stop in their place all the time. You know. And last summer I went over there. Well, every time I go to Unicliff, I always ask about them. If they're there, then I go visit her. And I never stop with her in their place. You know, because I have a lot of other friends in Unicliff that really, really like me. You know, if I stop some other place, I know this one guy will come and get me to stop with him. All the Unicliff people are really nice people. You know, in when we had stick dance here, all Unicliff people came over. Some Unicliff people came over. Most of them stop with me because they know me really well. And ever since that time, I told them, I said, my door is open anytime for Unicliff people. If you got no place to stop, I'd let them sleep on my bed if I have to. You know, because I know all Unicliff people respect me a lot, the ones that I know. So every time I go to Unicliff, this lady always tell me that. He said, my door is open for you anytime, good one. He said, anytime you come to Unicliff, you got to stop in my house. You got to stop with us. I know how good you treat us when it was in Caltech.
Well, do other people from Caltech still go to Unicliff?
There always a bunch like group goes over there. You know, like if I'm going over there and I tell go tell Franklin or Casper, they sure will go with me. And I'm pretty sure just two guys will go with me.
What about young people?
Young people, they never hardly go over there. There's no young generations go over there. And it's always good for young generations to go around and get acquainted with other friends, you know. But they meet one another in school. You know, a lot of them before we had the high school here. We meet some other schools, like at Chihuahua, Oregon, where they had Indian school. in Mount Edgecombe. They made a lot of friends around there too before, you know.
Well, I guess it changed too since they don't have to get groceries there. That's, I guess that's where a lot of people met Unalakleet people too.
Yeah, quite a ways back, not too far back than, you know, when we had no store here, we used to go over there and get some groceries. Well, now, for instance, that manager in Unalakleet is an Eskimo. He's half Eskimo. He knows me real well. And every time I go over Unalakleet, regardless if it's a Sunday or a Saturday, he said, I'll open the door for you, for the store for you anytime. As long as you come over here if you want to get some stuff, he said. Well, he does that. It's twice I went down Unalakleet that he opened the store for me on Sunday. You know. And if some guys go with me, some guys go with me from here, I tell them. Merlin, my nephew, and Josephine, Semekin from Galena. First time she went down Unalakleet last summer. And she was fishing with me down here. And I told her, you have to go to Unalakleet. His husband wanted to go to Galena, wanted to get some groceries, you know. But she didn't want to go to Unalakleet because his husband was drinking all the time, you know, and he didn't want to take him to Galena. I tell him, go to Unalakleet, I'm going to go to Unalakleet with my uncle, you know. So she was quite a help to me. She was quite a bit help to me because she was staying with us, you know. I mean, staying with me and staying in my house and staying down the camp with me. And as long as she was with me, I don't have to cook, I don't have to think about anything but washing my clothes and everything like that, you know. She do all those things for me when she's around me. And therefore, I just think of her just like my own daughter. You know.
So she's your niece?
Pardon?
That's your niece?
Yeah.
She lives in Galena now?
Yeah, well, he's married to my nephew. Oh. Therefore, she's my niece. You know. So, and then, you know, I took her over to Unalakleet. She went with me, and then first thing, it was 11 o'clock at night. And a lot of them were already in bed, you know. So what I did, went over to buy kicker, an outboard motor. So I went to this dealer I know in Unalakleet, but he was not there. Only his son was there. He was down in Anchorage. He was down in Anchorage, just this man, you know. So his son called him up and he told him I was there to get a kicker. Well, he knew me pretty well too. But he didn't have the kicker that I wanted. He didn't have the size kicker that I wanted. So I went to the native store, AC store. Well, it was pretty, like I said, it was late 11 o'clock at night, you know. So we was walking down, then I seen this lady, he's going to his smokehouse, doing that Frida Riley, you know. And then I said, hi, Frida. And then she just dropped what she got and she ran over to me, you know, and then she hugged me, you know, and he said, when you come over, I just came over now. We just came over now to do a little shopping, but the stores are closing. Come on in and have tea with us. So I brought two of my nieces in there, then we had tea, and then we sit around and talk for a while, and pretty soon Nick Riley, his husband, got up. He went to bed already, you know, and started talking with me. Well, he said, if you got no place to stay, come back. We'll make room for you. I said, I'm going over to Richard Ivanov, see if he got a phone, and then I'm going to call up my buddy. I told him, his brother, his name was Roland Ivanov. And so I went over there, and they were drinking. You know, I didn't know they were. Otherwise, I'd never went in there if I knew they were drinking. And his husband, Richard, has passed out. Richard Ivanov had passed out. Only his wife answered the door, and I came in, and then he said, "Oh, good when you came." And then she grabbed me, and then she hugged me. And yeah, we just come in. I was wondering if you had a phone. I want to call up Roland, see if we could stop with him tonight. I know they're in bed now, I told him. He told me to come on in. She went against the door. He said, "Good when you're not going out. You're going to stop in here with us." He said, you know. And then these other two ladies, my nephews, you know. Well, they know Marilyn, but they didn't know Josephine, my other nephew. The first time she went down there. So I introduced her. And then his husband heard my voice, you know, even though he was passed out. He jumped up. He said, "Good when you came." "Yeah, I came." I said, "I quit drinking right now, my friend. Right now, I wouldn't take no more drink." And that his wife, he said the same thing. He said, "No more drink for us. I know you never drink. We're going to eat." She started cooking, you know. I mean, she started cut up some meat. But, you know, I want some Eskimo food. Then he called his wife and said, "Margie, go get some berries for Goodwin. Fish or seal oil, whatever you want." He opened up the refrigerator and then he said, "What do you want, Goodwin?" That's how much those guys respect me. "What do you want to eat?" I said, "I'm going to eat berries and fish." And she took out some salmon strips and fish. And we sit around there and talk for about an hour. And pretty soon he sobered up. He said, "You're not going out. You're going to stop. You're going to stay overnight with us. We got 4 beds in there, empty right now. All my kids are all out." He said, "You take one room and this other two ladies will take another room." We all went to bed, you know. She really enjoyed the trip, you know. Then next morning it was Sunday, you know. So I went over to Martin Nanak. This guy's name was manager of the AC store. You know, I went over to him and I asked him, "Oh, we come over to do a little shopping." "Okay, I'll open up the store for you, good one." So we went over to the store, and then only 3 of us, he let us in, you know. And then we bought 2 kickers there. We bought 250 horse even route while we were there, you know. And then I give my niece, Josephine, I told her, I'll give you some money and you get all the groceries you want. All the groceries that you think we're going to use down the camp." So I give her $200 and I tell her, "If you need some more money, come and let me know." So she started to go shopping. Pretty soon you fill up 1 box, 2 box, 3 box, 4 box, 5 box of groceries besides the kicker, you know. So I told her, "Well, I'll pay for the rest of it. Whatever she runs short." I told the manager, you know. I said, he said, "No problem. You got a way to get it out?" "Yeah, right near service, we're going to take us at 2 o'clock back to Caltech." I said, I'll get this truck and bring your stuff up there at the airport. No room for these 2 kickers. So Ryan Air Service, his name is Boyak. And he said, "I'll take you over." He said, "I always enjoy that trip to Caltech." He said, I'm going to take you over." He's the manager of the air service there. And he said, "Me, I'm going to take you over in this new plane." He said, you know, yeah, the new plane there, 208. I said, "I'll take you over in this new plane." But I told him, we've got quite a bit of stuff. We've got quite a bit of groceries, and I think there'll be no room for the 2 kickers. "Don't worry about the kickers, but when we're going to make a run down to Caltech tomorrow with fish eggs, for fish eggs for the Japanese. You put those kickers on, we put that kickers on that plane, it won't cost you a penny, he said. It won't cost you anything to bring it over there. We're going over there for the Japanese to make a run for them for an egg roll, he said. I said, okay. So we left that day, and the next day they sent the kickers over, you know.
Japanese would buy their eggs with airplane from
Caltech,
from
Mineral Creek to Caltech? Well, the Japanese had their salting cannery out there at Unicle. They were buying some egg roll out there, but they couldn't get enough eggs to keep up with the business, I think, so you come over here, and then you got some buyer here to buy some fish eggs for them here in Caltech. And therefore, they were making one trip a day to pick up the egg roll and then take it out to Unicle. And then they salt them out there and then they ship it to Japan from there.
You know. Do they still do that in the summer?
They do that. They did that all last summer. We had a tough time.
This was last summer you're talking about?
Yeah, this was last summer I was talking about. We had a tough time to get a buyer in here for our egg roll and fish. So we went, Father Sebastian brought us over there and talked with the Japanese out there, see if you could make some kind of deal with them. Well, they were paying $3.20 a pound for fish eggs. You know, they said they would pay that much in here for our egg roll. And you know, so it was a better deal than we ever had. So we kind of stick together, the fishermen stick together here in Caltech. And then there was another guy came from McGrath, wanted to buy fish eggs for $3.40 a pound. Another guy came from Graylin, was paying $3.20, but he had a float plane. He could stop in every camp along, you know. There was four camps down this way. He could go down there and pick up the egg roll around there and pay us for the fish egg, for our egg roll right there, you know. But we stick together and said we're going to sell our fish eggs to the Japanese instead of selling to this guy to McGrath for $3.40 a pound. Or this guy from Graylin for $3.20 a pound, and then instead of that, we stick together, and then we haul our fish eggs up to here, and then we sold to the Japanese here. And Ryan Air Service don't want to handle no fish in their plane, just strictly charger trip that all he was doing, you know, and the passengers or for some stuff. But he said, I'll do it for Caltech people, this Ryanair service. He said, I'll do it for Caltech people. I'll haul the egg roll for the Japanese, make one trip a day to Caltech and haul that roll for the Japanese out uniquely. He said, he'll do it for us, you know. How come he know us real well, that Ryanair service? He's in 1942, during World War II time, his wife was a teacher in here, and he was in the service. Wilfred Ryan was in the service, and he had little airplane, you know. He got a little airplane under the GI Bill of Rights, and then we know him real well, and he thought he was just related to us the way he was acting, you know. And then the people treat him so nice in here, and then he remember it, you know. And then it went down to his son, to Wilfred Ryan Jr. It went down to him, you know. And then his boy is the same way right now. Boya is the same way. If we call for his plane from here, he don't wait. He come over and pick us up and go to Unicle, you know.
So it sounds like you're still close connected. direction did you locate them?
Well, it's about the same distance from here to Galena. You know, it's about the same distance. And it's about the same charger. But most of the people go to Galena to do some shopping, you know. Like some stuff that you couldn't get here.
But more people are related in Galena?
More people are related to Galena and they speak like us. You know, they got the same dialect like us. And we got more, I got a lot of friends up there, and so other people in town got a lot of friends up there. You know, but I still want to go to Unalakleet, me. You know, my opinion is that Eskimos are much better people than any other people, like especially in Unalakleet, you know.
Because they're friendly and they help.
They're friendly and they're helping. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, you mentioned father a lot of times. That's another thing I was wondering about is the relationship of the church to Caltag. You know, it seems like the church does a lot with the community.
Well, some other priest that has, well, so far that far as I know, the priest has done quite a bit for us here in Caltech, the Catholic priest. Well, uniquely, they're different religions, you know. But still like that, their father would go over there and try to convert some people, you know, to be a Catholic people. Like, for instance, there was only two Catholics up there at Huslia. You know, and that's quite a ways. It's much farther than Galena. It's about the same distance from here to Galena to Huslia. The father still goes up there just for those two Catholics that are living up there. Now father said there's more people start to go to this church, even though they don't believe it. They just still go to his church, you know, when he have mass up there. But those people don't think that he would fall converted to a Catholic, but they still believe in their religious, what they are believing into. And Unalakleet are the same way, you know. They are the same way, too. But for Father Sylvester here in Caltech, you know, he's been here since he was... Before he came to be a priest, he was just I don't know how to, I forgot
was
what the
volunteer or a brother or something.
No, he was learning how to be a priest when I first met him here in Caltech. You know, he had about 4 more years to go to become a priest, but he was as volunteer just working here. And he said he's going to be a flyer, you know. And now I think he's one of the best flyers that is. That priest could make millions if he wasn't a priest.
How is that?
Well, just a flying. He's a mechanic. He go fix his own plane, you know. And then the bishop relied on pretty much. So he's got twin motor back there. That belongs to the bishop, you know. He's got it back here on this field. And besides that, he's got his own 185 Cessna back here on the field. But only time he used the twin motor if the priest or the deacons have some meeting someplace, then he'd fly and take them to wherever he'd have meeting.
The other thing, when we were talking about this forced marriage or arranged marriage, I was wondering if your parents had arranged marriage like that, or if they ever talked about it themselves.
No, well, long time, in those days, I guess, you know, they were trying to get somebody like, you know, they never get married by church, you know, or had merit license, pay for merit license like we're doing right now. You know, they were just pick out some guys that are really a good hunter, good runner, a guy that thinks will make a good living, or, you know, well, long ago, they never used to travel very much, you know, like we're doing right now. Maybe they just see a girl, like some young guys see a girl and then a nice looking girl, or they get in love with her. Well, that didn't go too far for the older people, I guess, you know, that they think that they'll never get along or never have a good living or a good home and things like that. What most important thing the people were thinking about in those days was to make a good living and good home. And good home for their daughter or their son. And,
So anyway, we're just talking about how the older people, they didn't travel around like they do now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, for instance, there was a story that we always joking about one another here in Caltech. There was one lady here, and he had a daughter. He had no father, and there was a man came up. Wanted to get this young girl, you know, and he must be a young man too. So he told him to go across there. There's a lake across there. They call got native name.
They
call it Tomat's Oyster up here. Well, this old lady had fish trap up there for some blackfish, you know, little blackfish in that lake. And he told this boy to come. I mean, this boy came up from down the river and wanted to get married with his daughter, I think. The story went like this, something like this. So he told him to go up and check that fish trap up there in that lake. And the man was gone for quite a long time, practically all day. Come back in the evening, and when he came back, he made mistake. This man, he said, "Gee, that's a long ways, you know, and it's just very far." Well, that evening, the evening went by, and then he told his daughter to tell that boy to go back down to his place. It looks like he's not going to make a very good living the way it sounds. He said, you know, just this one word he said, you know, and this mother or this young lady figured it out, you know. It sounds like he's a lazy boy, and it sounds like he's not going to make a good living for you. Tell him to go back down. When you see some things like that, you kind of look at each other, I think, you know, the people before the couple get together and stay with one another, you know. And there was another a story that I could tell you about out here at this place where I was telling, where my mother was raised, what they call Rinder Station in English, you know. That there's one man there he had a daughter, but this man was well off. He was a rich man. You call him rich man, you know. He was well off. And he had a daughter. And there's a lot of different guys young guys that goes by want that daughter. But this old man don't want it, you know. This old man don't want to give his daughter away. Because he'd know this guys that go by don't know them real well, I guess. Or something like that, maybe you know something about him before, probably too, you know. So this one guy was coming through there, and then he said he know where this man, this rich guy had set for Wolverine. Well, Wolverine is the biggest important thing around here in those days, you know. They think it was a great thing. And anything, if you see it, if you see it in somebody's trap and you kill it, you got to come to that guy with the news. You see, you got Wolverine in your trap. I killed it for you. Well, he said, what do you want? You know, he asked this guy that killed Wolverine and bring the news to this guy. He said, what do you want? What do you name anything, whatever do you want? You know, so this guy was coming through, and then he know where this fella has his trap for Wolverine. And he, for some purpose, he went by that trap, and there was Wolverine in there. Like us people, like I say, you know, we tease one another about it, you know. Well, there was Wolverine in there, so he went right back right away and told this guy out there at this ranger station, he told him that there's Wolverine in your trap back there. It must be some deadfall trap, you know, that they used to set long ago. Well, what the Wolverine said to you? He asked me, what the Wolverine said to you?